Thanks, Dave. One of the subjects that we are discussing here is a three-way correspondence between three different, a priori different subjects. One is the geometric Langlands correspondence. Another is four-dimensional super Young Mills. And the third one is a two-dimensional conformal field theory. Initially, I guess the first of these links was this one between geometric Langlands and two-dimensional conformal field theory, and I'm going to talk a little bit about it at the beginning of my talk. And later on, in the work of Kapustin and Witten and others, it was realized that also there is a deep connection between the geometric Langlands correspondence and S-duality in four-dimensional super Young Mills. And more recently, Alday, Gayota, Tachikawa, and others have discovered beautiful connections also between four-dimensional super Young Mills and two-dimensional conformal field theories. And some of that we have already heard here last week, and we'll hear more about this in the remaining days of this conference. So, but now I would like to add one more topic to this, so it will actually be a square instead of a triangle, and that's quantum integrable systems. So the geometric Langlands is, in fact, closely connected to quantum integrable systems because the construction of the geometric Langlands correspondence, which I'm going to talk about briefly at the beginning of my talk, due to Balanchine and Drinfeld, actually is very closely connected to quantization of the Hitchin system, which is a very beautiful example of a quantum integrable system. We've known for a long time that there are also deep links between quantum integrable systems and two-dimensional conformal field theory. And in fact, more recently, the last missing link of this picture has also been discovered in the work of Nekrasov and Shetashvili. Who have essentially shown that supersymmetric vacua in four-dimensional super Young Mills theories could be described as eigenstates of quantum integrable systems. So now we actually have an even richer picture, and what I would like to do is actually talk about some of these links, not just the link between the geometric Langlands and two-dimensional conformal field theory, but also about the link to quantum integrable systems, and sort of, and at the very end also a little bit about the connection to four-dimensional super Young Mills. I have to say also that in the recent work by Nekrasov and Witten, some important development was made in terms of connecting the work of Nekrasov Shatashvili and the link between geometric Langlands and four-dimensional super Young Mills. In other words, interpretation of quantum integrable systems in terms of categories of brains which play such a prominent role in the link, in the description of S-duality in four-dimensional super Young Mills and its link to geometric Langlands. So that's roughly the big picture that in which we're going to operate. Okay, but let me start with this connection, geometric Langlands and two-dimensional conformal field theory. I have already talked a little bit about this in my opening talk last week, and I'll just be very brief here. I would like to view two-dimensional conformal field theory as a device or a factory, if you want, device for producing D modules on various moduli spaces. And this is how, so we're going to use this device to attack problem in the geometric Langlands program, in the geometric Langlands correspondence. So what is the geometric Langlands correspondence after all? Again, this is something which I have already reviewed last week, but let me say it one more time. The categorical form of the Langlands correspondence. Categorical Langlands correspondence has to do, is a statement about equivalence of certain categories associated to moduli spaces of bundles and fluid bundles. So as before, let C be a compact Riemann surface or complex algebraic curve, compact Riemann surface, and G would be a reductive Lie group over C. LG will be the Langlands dual group. Langlands dual group. And then we have two moduli spaces. One is called Bund G, which is a moduli, actually moduli stack, meaning that here we really take all bundles and organize them into a sort of algebraic object. It's not an algebraic variety, but it is an algebraic stack, meaning that we keep track of the automorphisms of the bundle. Moduli stack of G bundles on C. And we have another moduli space of, moduli stack rather, of flat G bundle, LG bundles, where LG now is the Langlands dual group on C. And by this I mean a pair, a bundle and a flat connection, which this would be a holomorphic bundle or algebraic principal bundle, and this would be, could be then viewed as a holomorphic connection on it. Automatically flat, since it's a complex manifold, C is one-dimensional. Categorical Langlands correspondence is a statement that suitably defined the following two suitably defined categories are equivalent. On one side, we have the category of all modules, or if you will, coherent sheaves. Coherent sheaves. On the moduli of local systems, on the moduli of flat bundles for the dual group. And the other one is the category of D modules on Bund G. The statement is that if we define these categories properly, and these categories should certainly be not abelian categories, but in fact derived categories, some triangulated categories, in other words, categories of complexes of such objects. And they need to be defined very carefully. In fact, Dima Rinkin gave a beautiful talk last Friday about his joint work with Dennis Gaisbury, in which they actually propose a concrete statement for this conjecture, in other words, concrete definitions for both of these categories, and the conjecture that they are equivalent to each other. But I'm not going to repeat that. I'm not going to make a precise statement as to what these categories are, but roughly these are derived categories. On one side, you have a derived category of all modules on flat bundles for LG, and on the other side, you have the derived category of D modules on the moduli of G bundles. Kapus and Witten have shown that this type of equivalence is actually very closely connected to S-duality. Well, S-duality and N equal 4 super Young-Mills S-duality. So Kapustin and Witten, S-duality in N equal 4 super Young-Mills gives rise, upon reduction to two dimensions, mirror symmetry. Mirror symmetry between sigma models with the target manifolds Hitchin moduli, so-called Hitchin moduli spaces for the group G and the dual group, and therefore one expects an equivalence of categories of brains, one of which will be the category of A brains. I explained this in more detail, so I'm not going to get now to repeat it more precisely. And the other one is a category of B brains. But B brains are essentially O modules. So this is B brains. This is a category of B brains. So in fact, this is here we essentially get on the nose the kind of category that a mathematician would consider in the categorical Langlands correspondence. This category is different from the category of D modules, but Kapustin and Whitten have suggested that in fact these two are, should also be equivalent, giving rise to this triangle of equivalences. So that's the picture of categorical Langlands, and I have indicated here this first link between geometric Langlands and four-dimensional super young mills, something that I've talked about in more detail in my first talk. But now we would like to approach this. Now we would like to approach this link by using two-dimensional conformal field theory. The statement that two categories are equivalent is a very strong statement. But as a first approximation to it, we can look at what this correspondence should do to some natural objects in the two categories. In the category of O modules, or B brains, there are very simple objects, namely skyscraper sheaves. For any point E in this moduli space, which would be a pair like this, an LG principal bundle, and a flat connection on it. For each point like this, we have a skyscraper sheaf. Well, at least for a smooth point, this is totally unambiguous. There is a unique skyscraper sheaf associated to this point, and this is an object of this category. This is what a physicist would call a zero brain. A brain supported at a point, a B brain supported at a point. So it is natural to ask, where does it go under this correspondence? So it should go to a certain object of this category of D modules, F sub E. And in fact, as I explained, in my first talk, this F sub E should be a very special D module, should satisfy a certain special property. It should be what's called a Heike eigensheaf. On bund G with respect to E. I'm not going to explain this again. This essentially means that on the category of D modules, there's a certain collection of functors, which are called Heike functors. And the eigensheaf property is a property that if you apply those functors to F sub E, you will get it back tensored with a certain vector space. Right? So, in other words, there are certain functors, H rho sub F, rho X. You apply those functors, you get rho tensor F sub for any representation rho of the dual group and a point on the curve. And this is a so-called Heike functors, which in the language of brains would be a so-called Hoeft operators. Okay, so now the basic question is, how do we construct the Heike eigensheaves? And this is where two-dimensional conformal field theory can be used, because as I said, the two-dimensional conformal field theory is a general device for producing D modules. Yes? Yes. This is a category. This is a category. It's a category. That's right. We don't look at any other structures at the moment. That's right. In fact, well, the first most obvious structure is a structure of a abelian category, right? So D, maybe I should say D is a sheaf of differential operators. Right, so the basic category that we have is abelian category. However, to have a chance to have such an equivalence, we should consider a more sophisticated object, but essentially the derived category. That is, roughly speaking, category of complexes, right, of D modules. So D here is a sheaf of differential operators. Operators on bound G. And a D module is a module over the sheaf. Conformal field theory gives rise to conformal filter gives us a tool or a device for producing precisely this kind of objects, D-modules. And so, in fact, conformal field theory originally at the outset gives us a way to produce D-modules not on Banach G, but on the moduli space of Riemann surfaces, on a MGN, on moduli space of curves of genus G, say, with n marked points. And as I explained in my first lecture, the way you construct this D-modules is by exploiting the Virasoro symmetry. So, and then the point is that Virasoro algebra essentially uniformizes the moduli space of curves with punctured points, with punctures. But if our conformal field theory has, in addition, symmetry by affine Kac-Moody algebra, then it's following exactly the same path, we produce D-modules not on the moduli space of curves, but on the moduli space of bundles. And so to explain this, I recall the I would like to recall the notion of conformal blocks. In fact, Jörg Teschner talked about conformal blocks in the case of Liouville model. And the definition which I will give now will be very similar, except I will now assume that my theory has my conformal field theory has affine Kac-Moody algebra. Okay. So let me So how to construct? So I would like to say that the two-dimensional conformal field theory, with G hat symmetry, where G hat is an affine Kac-Moody algebra, gives rise to a D-module or D-modules on Banach G. And in general, actually, it would be not just Banach G, but you can combine the two moduli spaces, moduli spaces of curves and bundles. And you would have moduli space of punctured curves as well as bundles, principal G bundles on them. So how does it work? To explain this, we have to recall the following definition: that suppose that you have M1 and Mn are G-hat modules of some level k, then phi, a linear functional on the tensor product of these modules is called conformal block, is a conformal block with respect to the affine Kac-Moody algebra. If the following condition holds, that phi of is invariant under the action of a certain Lie subalgebra, which acts on this module. So what do we have on the action on what do we have on the what kind of action do we have on this tensor product? Well, on each factor we have an action of the affine Kac-Moody algebra. So essentially, we have an action of the direct sum of n copies of the affine Kac-Moody algebra. But because they have the same level, we can identify this the central elements. And inside this this Lie algebra, we have a Lie subalgebra of sort of elements which live outside of the points. So here we would have to fix again a Riemann surface C and n punctures, let's say points x1 up to xn, and G out consists of all maps, all meromorphic functions on C with values in G, which are allowed to have poles at these points. At this point, x1 up to xn. So of course, I'm repeating something which was very fashionable, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago or so. So it's something, some old-fashioned material, but perhaps well forgotten by now. So so you have this Lie subalgebra in here, and you're interested in linear functionals on this tensor product, which are invariant under this Lie subalgebra. And of course, this should remind you of the words identities which Yerk wrote in the case of Liouville model. The difference is that in Liouville model we only have the Virasoro symmetry, and so instead of meromorphic functions with values in Lie algebra G, this Lie algebra G out, we take vector fields which are meromorphic and only allowed to have poles at those points. And the familiar word identity from Liouville theory would be the statement that conformal block is invariant under the action of this Lie subalgebra. Now we do exactly the same, except we replace Virasoro algebra by the affine Kac-Moody algebra. I'm being a little bit I'm cheating a little bit. More precisely, if you have a conformal field theory, a conformal block in that theory would be a linear functional which would satisfy such a property for all possible fields in the theory. So for example, your theory may have not only affine Kac-Moody algebra, but it may have other generators. In that case, to have really a conformal block, you would have to impose the similar conditions for those other generators. But now I'm assuming that not only it has a G-hat symmetry, but it is actually generated by the G-hat symmetry. So for instance, a Wessel-Minna-Witten model of level k, which is a positive integer, would be such a conformal field theory. Okay, so you have this conformal block. So far, and so we can look at... it's a Lie algebra element, so invariance means that it is equal to zero. Right? If it were a group, you would say that it is phi of V. But for Lie algebras, that's a natural condition of invariance. And so we have the space of conformal blocks, which would be, which we can call C's. Well, maybe C is not a good. Let's call it curly C, because we have a curve, we have a collection of points, and we have a collection of representations, which correspond to the insertion of some of vertex operators of a particular kind at those points. This would be correspond to M1, this would correspond to MN, and with many things in between. And so that's the vector space of conformal blocks, which is realized now as a subspace in the dual space, in the full dual space to this. And it is also convenient to consider its dual, which is a space which is called the space of coinvariance. Which is space of coinvariance is just going to be the quotient of this tensor product by the action of G out. This is a dual space which is called the space of coinvariance, because it is a space of coinvariance by this action. Well, these are the invariants and the functionals, and these are coinvariants. Of course, there is a natural pairing between them. Okay, so far it's just one vector space. And what I would like to get is a D module on bund G. A D module on bund G is in particular an O module, a quasi-coherent sheaf. And so it has fibers at different points of bund G. And points of bund G are G bundles. So I have to describe a fiber of this D module. And that should be a vector space depending on a point of bund G. Yes? Usually these modules will not be finite dimensional because there is a certain condition that it should be it's called a module from category O, a positive energy module. And there's only one such finite dimensional module, namely the trivial one. So these are going to be infinite dimensional modules over the affine Kac-Moody algebra. For each n-tuple of such modules, I have a vector space of conformal blocks and a vector space of coinvariance. It's not a single vector space. It's a vector space which depends on certain data, and the data are the curve, the points, and the modules inserted at the points. Right, there is an answer to this question, but since it is a little bit somewhat transversal to the subject of my talk, I would rather answer it later. Is that okay? So, the short answer is that indeed, in the case of Wessel-Minna-Witten model of integral level k, these spaces, in this case, M1, Mn would have to be integrable representations of that level. And the corresponding space of coinvariance could then be constructed by using the small quantum group, what's called a small quantum group, at the root of unity, which is equal to e to the pi I divided by k plus dual coefficient. However, that's not the case that that is relevant to the geometric Lange lens. The case that is relevant to the geometric Lange lens is the case of when the level is takes so-called critical value. It's equal to minus the dual coefficient number. But let me finish the story. So here I want to introduce the dependence on E, which is a point, or maybe let's call it P, principal G bundle. The point is I can do the same construction, but I can define G out, at least subalgebra G out of P, which would be instead of meromorphic functions with values on G, it will be sections. Sections. I would just write like this. C without the points x1, xn, with values in GP, where GP is a vector bundle which is associated to P and the adjoint representation. So for each principal G bundle, there is a version, there is a least subalgebra inside G hat n with the centers identified. And so it acts on the tensor product of modules. And we can take the space of coinvariance now. We can take the space of coinvariance, which by this least subalgebra. So this gives us a vector space, which now depends, depends on P. And in fact, it's very easy to show that this vector space is combined into a quasi-coherent sheaf. Or a B-brain, if you want, coherent sheaf on bungee. The simplest example of this is when actually this vector space is a finite dimensional and of the same rank for all twists, for all G bundles P. In this case, in fact, what we'll get is a vector bundle on bungee, which is the simplest kind of quasi-coherent sheaf. In general, however, this may not be a vector bundle. In other words, dimensions could jump along bungee. They don't have to be the same. They could even become infinite. But in any case, we're going to get a quasi-coherent sheaf. What is slightly less trivial is the fact that it's not just an O module, not just a coherent sheaf, but actually has a natural structure of a D module. In other words, it has a flat connection. More precisely, it has not a flat, but what's called projectively flat connection. It's almost flat, but the usual anomaly associated with the level K makes the its curvature non-zero, but somehow non-zero in the most benign way. So this sheaf carries a projectively flat connection. In other words, we can multiply sections by functions, but we can differentiate sections with respect to vector fields. Flat connection. And so, in other words, we get a D module. On bungee. After all, D modules are, what is a D module? It's a sheaf on which you can act by multiplication by functions, but also can differentiate sections. And that's what I mean when I say that a two-dimensional conformal field theory with G hat symmetry is a device for producing D modules on bungee. You just have to feed into this device a Riemann surface C, the points x1 up to xn, and a collection of appropriate modules over G hat over a given level. Now, if we apply this construction to the case of a Wessel-Minnewitten model, we will not get anything particularly interesting. The point is that in this case, in fact, all of the spaces for different p's are isomorphic to each other. They're finite dimensional vector spaces of the same dimension. So we're actually going to get a vector bundle. And and this vector bundle essentially will have a trivial flat connection. So that's why in the study of Esselman-Witten model, you never hear about this D-module on bund G. What you hear about is rather the corresponding bundle on the moduli of curves with punctures. And in this case, you actually get some non-trivial connection on this moduli space, which is, for example, in genus 0, is what's called the Knijenko-Zamolodchikov connection. In genus 1, Knijenko-Zamolodchikov-Bernard connection, and so on. This connection tells you how the space of conformal blocks vary with respect to the changing of the complex structure on C. What I am interested in right now is how the spaces change with respect to the G-bundle structure. And unfortunately, in the case of, well, or fortunately perhaps, in the case of Esselman-Witten model, they don't really change with respect to the vector, the G-bundles. But in the most general case, in particular the case which I will consider next, actually, we will get a non-trivial D-modules on bund G. And these D-modules would then give rise to this Heck-Eigen sheaves. We want to use this machine to get this F sub E Heck-Eigen sheaves. On bund. So, and to do that, we actually have to look at a very special value of K, which is called the critical value. And that's minus dual Coxeter number. Oftentimes in our lectures here, it is actually defined, it is written as minus H, which is not, well, I'm using this notation to distinguish between this and what's called the Coxeter number. If the group is not simply connected, these are not the same. The dual Coxeter number. If the group is not simply laced, they're not the same. Not simply connected, but simply laced. So something very special happens at this level, and we can see that already by looking at the the Shugawara operators. For any level, we can form in the affine Kac-Moody algebra, we can form the following current. So first of all, let me denote as usual the currents of the affine Kac-Moody algebra. If you wish, we can write them in Fourier coefficients, in Fourier modes, like this. And this would be the generators of the affine Lie algebra, thought of as the central extension of G tensor Laurent polynomials in some variable T. Right, so that's the usual. And JA is a certain, is some basis of G. So we have this current JA, and then we define the Shugawara current by the usual formula. 1 half sum over A, JA of Z, JA lower A of Z. Well, this would be the dual basis. So of course this expression, this quadratic expression, would not depend on the choice of a basis. So we can write this further, write it out in Fourier coefficients, Fourier modes, get this. And then we have the following beautiful formula for the commutation relations between this SNs and JA M's. It is equal to K plus dual Coxeter number times M times J A N plus M. So apart from this overall factor, K plus dual Coxeter number, this looks like the action of vector fields on functions. If we take the vector field T to the N plus 1 d dt, actually I guess I should put a minus sign because a vector field should be really negative T to the N plus 1 d dt, which is a vector field which is represented by the Shugawara, which often is represented by the Virasoro generator Ln. Then applying it to T to the M, we're going to get minus M T to the N plus M, just like stipulated here. So this immediately suggests that if we rescale Sn's divided by k plus dual Coxeter number, provided that k is not equal to minus dual Coxeter number, then we will get action of Virasoro, action of vector fields, which actually will be action of its central extension of vector fields in the Virasoro algebra. And this, of course, is exploited extensively in the study of, say, Wessamine-Witten models, right? For example, to produce the Knishik-Zamolodchuk equation, that's exactly the formula that one uses. Now, so this everything looks fine, except that we kind of, in this construction, we kind of keep forgetting about the case k is equal to minus dual Coxeter number. And so now, in fact, I would like to focus on this case when k is minus dual Coxeter number. And in this case, in fact, what happens is that we cannot rescale anymore. So we shouldn't rescale. We should just keep them unnormalized as Sn's, given just by this formula. And in fact, at this value k equal to minus dual Coxeter number, they actually commute with the affine Kac-Moody algebra. They actually commute with the entire affine Kac-Moody algebra. In other words, if you would take the OPE, operator product expansion, between this current and any of the Kac-Moody currents, you will get something regular without poles at the diagonal, which means precisely that these Fourier modes commute with the affine Kac-Moody algebra. In other words, they become central elements. Central elements in the appropriately completed universal enveloping algebra of the affine Kac-Moody algebra at this level. Or equivalently, you can say that these are central elements in the corresponding chiral algebra. In the chiral algebra. So in the case of, so then we have the following, actually, this brings up the question as to what is the center of the chiral algebra of the affine Kac-Moody algebra for all values of level. And we have a complete description of that, which actually is a very old theorem of Egan and myself. Almost 20 years, which says that, first of all, the central is trivial. Center is trivial. Consists of scale or just scalars, identity operator, trivial when the level is not equal to minus dual Coxeter number. But for k equal to minus dual Coxeter number, the center, when I say the center, I mean the center of the chiral algebra. It's a little bit easier to describe the center in the chiral algebra instead of the enveloping algebra. And so for k equal to minus dual Coxeter number, the center is freely generated by this Shugawara operator, Shugawara current, as well as, which let me call it S1 of C, as well as some additional generators. There are as many of them as the rank of G. And the degrees of these operators are what you would expect. They are the orders of the Casimirs, of the generating central elements in the finite dimensional Lie algebra's universal enveloping algebra. So this one is quadratic, and those would have orders given by the exponents of the Lie algebra plus one. Unfortunately, we don't have explicit formulas in general for those higher Shugawara operators. There's a very nice explicit formula for the first one. And one could try to write the formulas for the higher ones, but we don't really, there isn't, it somehow doesn't quite work nicely. There isn't really a very nice formula in general. There are some nice formulas maybe for SLN and in some special cases, but not in general. So that's the result. And so that already tells us that this case is very special. And so what this allows us to do is it allows us to introduce a very large family of modules over the affine Kac-Moody algebra at this level. Because, as I said, to construct a D module, we actually have to pick all this data. We have to pick a curve of Bachscher points. But more importantly, we have to insert some modules. And usually, there are not so many modules. Or maybe the parameter has some finite dimensional space of parameters. But in this case, actually, there are modules we can parameter. We can produce a family of modules which have infinite dimensional space of parameters, because we can set, because these are central elements, and so we can actually set them equal to some numeric values. In other words, we can set them equal to some essentially Taylor power series. So, here's how it works. I will just consider the case when of one puncture. In the simplest case, suppose that I have just one puncture. And at this puncture, I don't want to have any parabolic structures or anything like this. So I would actually have to put the vacuum module at this puncture. And the vacuum module, of course, is, so let's call it V minus dual Coxeter number of G, vacuum module. Of G hat at the critical level. So that's a module which is generated by a vector which is annihilated by all positive, all non-negative modes. Yet another way to look at it is that it actually is a space of, well, it's a space of states in a vacuum sector of this conformal field theory, or in other words, it is actually the chiral algebra itself. By means of state field correspondence, we can identify vectors in this module with the fields or currents, holomorphic currents of this of the theory. And so now what we can do is we can take the quotient of this guy. By the following relation, we can set each of the Si of Z to be equal to some numeric chi I of Z, numeric power series. Right, where this is actually a complex number. And so, in principle, it looks as though we could take any formal power series in both directions. But in fact, half of the coefficients of this central currents will actually act by zero on the entire vacuum module. So we should not set them equal to anything non-zero. So in fact, the proper way to do is to only consider things which are only for power series in Z, in one variable. So in other words, imposing this relation just means that the corresponding coefficient here, we just identify with chi im. So whenever you try to act by this operator, you will just be multiplying by this number. So this way, you will actually produce, we call it V chi, where chi would refer to the collection of this formal power series. And so you will get a family of quotients of this vacuum module which are parametrized by an L tuple, because there are L of them, from 1 to L, L tuple of formal Taylor power series. But this description is still quite unsatisfactory, because implicitly in this description, I have chosen a local coordinate Z. And if I'm on a general Riemann surface, there is no canonical choice of coordinate in the neighborhood of a given point. So I have to give a description of this parameter, this L tuple, which is independent of the choice of the coordinate. In other words, I have to describe this center. I have to describe this center in a canonical way, in a coordinate independent way. And so that's the next step, the next result which Fagin and I obtained. And this is a statement that, in fact, so maybe I want to keep this, but just switch. That actually the center is isomorphic to the algebra of functions on the space of Oppers, the so-called space of Oppers. Not really. I don't see why it should. This is something. The center is defined is something about the local situation. You have this just a module over the affine Katz module, but it doesn't know anything about the curve, right? And so we just define, it's like you have a universal enveloping algebra over simple algebra, G, and you describe its center. So it's something which has nothing to do with. Yeah, right. Well, it's a somewhat different situation, though. So so the part three of that theorem would be the statement that, in fact, this center, which let me call it Z of G hat, is isomorphic to the algebra functions on Oppers for the Langlands dual group on the disk around our point. And so, since I'm running out of time, I probably shouldn't give a precise definition of Oppers. But fortunately, there is an alternative description in terms of an object which is somehow being discussed here quite widely, and that object is a W algebra. So the Oppers are this algebra has another name, and that's the classical W algebra, or classical limit of the W algebra. Associated to the Langlands dual. So the appearance of the Langlands dual here, of course, is not accidental, and in fact, this is what causes the appearance of the Langlands dual group in the construction, in the fact that we're actually constructing the Langlands correspondence, where, of course, the Langlands dual group should be manifestly present. This is the result through which the Langlands dual group appears in this construction. So the W algebras, I want to recall that we have a family of W algebras, which to be closer to the previous talks, and probably also subsequent talks, I would denote this parameter by B. And that's a parameter which York, for example, used in the case of Liouville model. So this W algebra has one complex parameter, and in fact, for example, in the case when G is SL2, this is a Virasoro algebra with central charge something like 1 minus 6 B minus 1 over B squared, up to maybe some signs or plus in your notation. Okay. That's right. So this classical limit would be W infinity of LG. Right, it's W infinity of LG, exactly. Classical limit is when B goes to infinity. So in fact, the way Fagin and I proved this result, so here you have this isomorphism, right? Let me restate this isomorphism one more time. You have, on one side, you have the center, and this is the center of the chiral algebra, let's just write it in words, chiral algebra of G hat at the level minus dual Coxeter number. And this turns out to be isomorphic to the W algebra of the Langlands dual when the parameter B is equal to infinity. In fact, this isomorphism is a limiting case of a more general isomorphism, which we had found in the course of proving this, for general values of B. And that, of course, is very closely related to the duality of Liouville model and more general Toda theories, which are quite relevant to our discussion here. And namely, that isomorphism is the following, that if we take here B for G, this would be isomorphic to W1 over B for LG. So for example, SL2 is self-dual, and if you replace B by 1 over B, you will get Virasoro algebra with central charge in which you will switch B and 1 over B. But of course, this formula is invariant under this transformation, so there is no contradiction. But the interesting element is that if you try to do it for general W algebras, not only you will have to invert the parameter B, but you would also have to replace G by the Langlands dual. And Fagin and I actually explained it in the context of T-duality, of a very basic T-duality of bosonic, two-dimensional bosonic free field theories compactified on tori, corresponding to the root and coroot lattices of the Lie algebra. By the way, a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about can be found in my lectures, which I wrote about 5 years ago, which are lectures which on Langlands program and conformal field theory, which are on the archive on the on HEPTH 2005-12 something. And so in particular, this issue, there is an explanation about this, how this duality is derived. So what happens is that when B goes to zero, this becomes actually the center of the chiral. Maybe I'll write like this. This is the center of the chiral algebra. And this becomes the classical limit. So this 1 over B goes to infinity now. It becomes the classical limit, so you get the classical W algebra. The center actually lives inside the chiral algebra, which makes you wonder as to whether the W algebra for general values of B also lives in the corresponding chiral algebra. Unfortunately, that's not the case. You cannot fit the W algebra unless it's just Virasoro. Just the Virasoro part, of course, you can easily fit by using the Shugawara construction. But the entire W algebra for G of rank greater than 1, you cannot fit, as it were, in the chiral algebra, only at the critical level and only at the infinite level. So when we made this construction, what we used is the so-called Drinfeld-Sokolov reduction. And the Drinfeld-Sokolov reduction is the idea is to enlarge the chiral algebra of the affine Kac-Moody algebra by throwing in some fermions. So you throw in fermions with values in the nilpotent subalgebra, and then you have a natural BRST operator whose cohomology precisely produces the W algebra for any level k. So B would be something like the square root maybe I times the square root of k plus dual Coxeter number, something very close to this. And so this actually would for non-zero B, this is how you would get this W algebra and how you would be able to establish this isomorphism. Then when you specialize B to zero, you would obtain we identified the result of Drinfeld-Sokolov reduction at the critical level with the chiral algebra, and then shown that this isomorphism actually holds also in this limit. So that's roughly the picture. And to make contact with Liouville theory and the connection between Liouville and four-dimensional, which Tachikawa talked about and also Jörg Teschner, B would be then epsilon 1 divided by epsilon 2, right? Where epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 are the two equivariant parameters, the omega background in the description. Vasily Peston talked about this, the omega backgrounds in four-dimensional super Young Mills. These are the two parameters. And so the limit when B goes to 0 would correspond to the limit when one of these epsilons goes to 0. And that's exactly the situation considered by Nekrasov and Shatashvili, right? So Nekrasov and Shatashvili, they have one of the parameters equal to 0. So it is like going to this critical level. So I have described the basics of representation theory of the affine Kac-Moody algebras at the critical level. And I have explained that you have this large center of the chiral algebra, which actually can be identified with a classical W algebra. This allows you to construct many modules, and so then you can feed these modules in this machine. And so if you actually take a Riemann surface with one puncture, and you insert at this one puncture this module V chi, which I introduced here, you can just apply this construction. So for each chi, which would be a point in the spectrum of this classical W algebra, then you would produce a D module on bond G. More precisely, this will not be a D module, it will be a twisted D module. It will be twisted by a line bundle, which is the square root of the canonical line bundle. That's because we have here representation of level minus dual Coxeter number, which precisely corresponds to the square root of the canonical line bundle. More generally, I should have said from the outset that what we get is not D modules, but what's called twisted D modules. This is related to what I commented on earlier, which is that you get not a flat connection, but a projectively flat connection. A projective flat connection is an example of a twisted D module, just like a flat connection is an example of a D module. So, and now the point is that we can choose as chi, as I said, chi could, this W algebra, classical W algebra, may be thought of as algebra functions on the space of Hoppers. And so in particular, but all pairs just on the disk around this point. And so what we could do is we could actually choose as our parameter, which is an all pair, something which doesn't just live on the disk, but also lives on this entire Riemann surface. And suppose that chi, so in fact what happens is that if chi, that this D-module is non-zero, if and only if chi can be extended to an LG opera on the entire Riemann surface and not just on the disk, on the disk dx around this point. And in this case, it will actually give us, if it does, it will actually give us a Hecke eigenschief for an LG local system. I'm suppressing the definition of opers because of lack of time, but the important thing to know about opers is that any oper, any LG oper, automatically gives a flat LG bundle. So let's say if it's chi, it will give you flat G bundle E. And it is, so the result of this construction would then be a Hecke eigenschief with respect to that flat bundle E associated to the opera. This construction is due to Bellinson and Drinfeld, who are really introduced these ideas of a conformal field theory into the geometric Langlands correspondence in the mid 90s. So the upshot of this construction is, okay, conformal field theory with Kac-Moody symmetry gives you a device for producing D-modules, and we want to produce D-modules in the geometric Langlands correspondence. So how to do this? Well, turns out there is a special value K where there is no Virasoro algebra, but then there is this large chiral algebra, a large center in the chiral algebra. And by applying this construction, this general construction of CFT to the modules at this special value of level, we actually produce a large collection of Hecke eigenschiefs. Those Hecke eigenschiefs which are associated to this what's called LG opers, the particular parameters. So now I'll probably go just 5 minutes over to say a few words about integrable systems. This D module FE in this construction, this construction is rather abstract and it doesn't quite describe this D module explicitly, but in fact, Bellinson and Drinfeld have also given a more explicit, a more concrete realization in terms of the quantization of the Hitchin system. Quantization of the Hitchin system. So in fact, they looked at the algebra of global differential operators acting on the line bundle of half forms on bond G. And they have shown, so let's call this algebra D one half. And they have shown that this algebra is actually commutative algebra, and it is isomorphic to the algebra of functions on opers on the Riemann surface C for the Langlands dual group. So remember, the center of the chiral algebra was isomorphic to functions on opers on the disk in the neighborhood of one point, but this actually turns out to be a quotient of this algebra. This is an infinite dimensional algebra which lives on the disk, but this is a global object which corresponds to the curve, and so it is like you can consider, for example, let's say differentials which live on in the neighborhood of one point. So this would be like Laurent Taylor power series in some variable, dt times dt, where dt is a local coordinate. But then you can also look at differentials which live on the entire Riemann surface. So then you will get a g-dimensional space, finite dimensional space. And so here it will be, so it is similar, except I look at functions, not at the spaces themselves, but I look at functions on them. So the maps go in the opposite direction. this is an algebra in infinitely many variables. This is an algebra in finitely many variables, which is where is a polynomial algebra in some differential, in some generators D1, DM, where M is the dimension of bound G. So this is an example of a quantum integrable system, because you have a maximum possible number of commuting differential operators acting on a particular line bundle. And in fact, these operators have as symbols, they have, well, Hamiltonians of the Hitchin system, because, well, the symbols would be functions on the cotangent bundle to bound G, which is the Hitchin moduli space. And on the Hitchin moduli space, Hitchin constructed commuting, Poisson commuting Hamiltonians. These are the differential operators which quantize those Poisson commuting Hamiltonians. So now the this D module F sub E, which at which you can look from the through the prism of conformal field theory as a result of this general construction of producing D modules from conformal field theory, you can describe it now alternatively by using this commutative algebra of global differential operators. Namely, now this the same parameter chi was the parameter of my of this construction. We'll now assume that it is an oper on the Riemann surface. And this will, we can construct the D module as follows. We can just take the sheaf of differential operators. My straight D one half would be global differential operators. And curly D one half would be the sheaf of differential operators. Sheaf of differential operators acting on K one half. We can take the quotient of this by the ideal corresponding to this chi. And the ideal is just the maximal ideal, well, just the ideal, maximal ideal in the global differential operators, D one half, corresponding to this point. So in other words, well, just from the formal point of view, this quotient gives you a D module, because this D has an action of differential operators from left and right. So you divide it by a left ideal, and therefore it still remains a left D module. But still more concretely, we should think of this D module as representing the system of differential equations. System of differential equations. Of partial differential equations. Namely, we can choose some generators of this algebra of differential operators D1, DM, and then the equation is DI psi is equal to some value, which I'll call lambda I psi. And what is lambda I? Well, each of these DIs under this identification is a function on opers. And chi is a point in opers, so you can evaluate di at chi. So lambda I is the value of di viewed as a function on the space of opers. This is the eigenvalue. So what? So we can just, because we have commuting family of differential operators, we can just pose the eigenvalue problem, the joint eigenvalue problem, or eigenfunction problem. The I psi equals lambda I psi. And what is the connection between this and this D module? So this statement is that this is precisely this D module F sub E, according to Balanz and Drinfeld, which I previously have produced by using conformal field theory. So the point is that if you have this D module, you can consider home from this D module to any given space of functions. And these homes will consist of the space of solutions. This home will be the space of solutions. So home from FE, which is by definition this, this quotient, two, let's call it some space S, which is a particular class of functions. Class of functions, or more precisely, because these operators really act not on functions, but on half forms. It would be a particular class of half forms. Is the space of solutions in this functions space? So you see, there is a universal object, which is a system of equations. But when you write the system of equations, you do not say where you look for solutions. There's a choice, right? It is like you have an algebraic, say you have a scheme, but then you can have points of that scheme for any algebra, say, over your field, if it's a scheme over a field. So likewise, the system of differential equations, or D-module, is a universal object. And the space of solution, to talk about solutions, you have to pick the space where you look for solutions. For example, you could look at analytic functions, or you can look at functions which prescribe singularities, and so on. In this particular case, there are no holomorphic sections of this line bundle, so it's not wise to look at sections in this line bundle. So for example, what Nekrasov and Witten suggest is, and also following Nekrasov and Shatashvili, is to look at solutions in a space which is defined by some half-dimensional real submanifold in the modular space of G-bundles. Then you can just take L2 of that subspace, and differential operators will still act, so still the system of equations still makes sense, and you can look talk about the eigenvalue problem or eigenfunction problem in that particular space. So there is this natural choice, right? This natural choice of, and in fact, this Hitchin system naturally arises in the study of, in the construction of Nekrasov-Shatashvili and also Nekrasov-Witten, it arises, and now and we can understand from the point of view which we have discussed so far how it arises. Well, we have seen that two-dimensional conformal field theories appear from four-dimensional conformal field theories, and the parameter B corresponds to epsilon 1 over epsilon 2. So here you would have to arrange, take a particular supersymmetric Young-Mills theory, and also take epsilon 1 equal to 0, or one of the epsilon equal to 0. So in that limit, you will get a particular quantum integrable system. And this kind of integrable systems show up. Although, the easiest example is when the Riemann surface is an elliptic curve. In this case, you actually take just n equal 4 super Young-Mills. But in general, you have to take the curve C, and in that case, as far as I understand, the corresponding theories may not have Lagrangian description, the corresponding four-dimensional theories, which would give rise to this Hitchin integrable system. Yet, this integrable system is very much part of the universe of the of this quantum integrable systems appearing in this correspondence. And so the last thing I want to say is that we can try to exploit this. We can now talk about the space of solutions. And from the just purely algebraic point of view, we see that the geometric Langlands doesn't give you solutions to the eigenvalue problem. It just gives you the eigenvalue problem. It just fixes this eigenvalues lambda I, which really correspond to fixing that upper chi. Because, as I said, lambda I is the value of D on considered as a function value of D at chi, at this point chi. And so, so we see that there is this additional parameter. If we really want to talk about the analytical problem, the problem as what we normally would call a quantum integrable system, not just a collection of differential operators, but a particular space where they act, and so we can pose the eigenfunction problem, right? So that involves a choice. And that choice of S could be thought of as a choice of a brain in a cotangent bundle to bundle G. And so the space of solutions can then be thought of, so the space of solutions can be thought of as home in the language of brains, as home from this canonical quasi-tropic brain, which Kapustin and Witten have constructed, to that brain B. And so that's the idea of Nekrasov and Witten, that actually this gives us a way to relate this construction his construction of the quantum Hitchin system to the construction to the category of brains which Kapustin Whitner studied. But the main point is that what you should do is you should really look at Holmes in the category of brains to relate to the eigenvalue problem. You should look at Holmes, and more specifically, you should look at the Holm from the canonical quasi-isotropic brain to a particular brain which specifies the space of solutions. And this way, you actually recover or interpret some of the results of Nekrasov and Shtashvili, because on the one hand, this space is the space of supersymmetric vacuum. But on the other hand, it is a space in which there is a basis of eigenfunctions of this quantum integrable system, which was the idea and the result of Nekrasov and Shtashvili. And so for me, this is very interesting also because there is also a special case in which this can be related to something which I have worked on with Feigen Reshtichin and also with Valery Tendan Laredo, namely the Gaudin models. So this whole picture can also be specialized to the case when C is equal to P1. And in this case, we can actually, the analysis can be done in a completely algebraic way because the corresponding moduli space of G bundles is very simple. Well, we have to enhance it by allowing ramification at finitely many points. So in this case, what we get is what's called Gaudin model, or generalization of the Gaudin model. Gaudin model. And for Gaudin model, in my previous work with Feigen and others, we have described the spectrum of the corresponding Gaudin operators in terms of monodromy-free operators. And so as Nekrasov and Whitten explained that this actually fits very well into this picture which they have developed, which is that you can interpret our result about the description of the spectrum of Gaudin Hamiltonians by analyzing the mirror dual of the brains which appear to give us the Gaudin model. But since I'm hopelessly out of time, I should probably stop here and take some questions. Thank you. So more precisely, here I actually have fixed eigenvalues, right? But so what we could do is instead say look at this problem where lambda I's are also free parameters. So all possible eigenvalues, all possible eigenfunctions, right? In that case, you would be talking not about Holm from this sheaf, but just from the sheaf d one half, which is what you said, right? So in other words, if we do not fix precise lambda i's, in other words, we're not looking for eigenfunctions with particular eigenvalues, but we look at the entire spectrum, right? Then the natural thing to do would be to take Holm from the entire sheaf of differential operators to some space S. That would be the space of all possible eigenfunctions with all possible eigenvalues. Okay? But according to Kapustin and Whitten, this corresponds to, in the category of A brains, which I talked about earlier, which is parallel to the category of D modules, this precisely corresponds to BCC. And this would correspond to some brain B. This is on the A model side for the group G. And then the point is that if you know the transform of this brain, then you can describe the spectrum because the isomorphism between global differential operators and functions on operators can be interpreted in the picture of mirror symmetry as the statement that the dual brain to BCC is the brain of operators, is a B brain of operators. So this would be just operators on the curve viewed as the support of a brain in MH of LG. So B brain in MH of LG. And this would be the dual brain right? And so if you're lucky, so this is half dimensional. If you're lucky, B prime would also be half dimensional, and so they will intersect transversely. And you would say that possible eigenfunctions are precisely the intersection points between Oppers and point and this brain, which would be Opper satisfying certain condition. So you could also imitate it at the level of the geometric Langlands correspondence. In the mirror symmetry world, this is an A brain, and this is an A brain, and we want to consider dual B brains on the Hitchian moduli space. But also in the categorical Langlands correspondence, we can talk about the corresponding sheaves on the moduli of local systems. So that would be home. This would be the structure sheaf of Oppers. Also, same thing. And this would be some coherent sheaf. I don't know, let's call it A. And so again, you can also try to analyze it just in these terms. And so so this way you produce a connection between the space of between the eigenvalue problem in this quantum interval system and a home in the category of brains. And you can use S-duality to describe then the spectrum. And this is familiar to people who worked on the Gaudin model, because in the Gaudin model we have also results where the spectrum is expressed as Oppers satisfying some conditions. But now the statement is that that condition is simply encoded by this dual brain B prime. And the reason why then it is like that is because this brain is dual to the brain describing the space of solutions in which you're looking for the eigenvalue problem. That's the upshot of this discussion. For example, no monodromic condition should also appear as a dual condition, as a condition imposed by the B brain dual to the A brain corresponding to the space of solutions in which you have chosen to look for the eigenvalue problem. That's the idea.